This is Entrepreneurs the Playbook, where each week I bring you some of the greatest athletes, celebrities, and entrepreneurs to talk about their personal and professional playbook to success.
Welcome back to Office Hours. I'm David Meltzer. Wow, this has been the world record edition episode of Office Hours, and I'll be bringing one of the world's best hospitality experts. He is an executive producer, an entrepreneur, an investor. It's amazing. People ask people like John Taffer, how do you do it all? And I have recently in my middle age here in my 50s realized how people like John do it. And it's actually from the strength within knowing your own essence. And as I look through your resume and all the great achievements with Taffer's Tavern and Bar Rescue and the list will go on and on, and I'm sure you ask questions about it, I'm really curious on when and how you took inventory of your own skills, your knowledge of who and what, and your desires, and then were able to amplify it in all types of different opportunities. And it took me a long time to learn this lesson, trying to be what everybody else thought I was supposed to be. And once I learned who I was, skills, knowledge, and desire-wise, I was able to amplify my own essence, and the abundance followed very quickly. Yeah. Were you conscious about doing that for yourself?
I think you have. A little. I think I had an advantage in that my dad died when I was two. My grandfather, who raised me, invented direct mail. Actually got credit for it, created the direct marketing agency, became worth hundreds of millions of dollars, created the Betsy Wetsy, the first wedding doll. We looked like my mother. And so I grew up in this entrepreneurial, very creative marketing family. So I knew that I wanted to do creative things. I knew that I wanted to do my own thing. My family used to always say, John, the leather chair is waiting. But I never went to the family agency. I went and did it on my own. And at some point, David, I got hooked to people smiling. And everything that I do in life makes people smile in some way. When I rescue a bar, I get that hug and I get that smile. As a hospitality guy, I get that smile. And I sort of got hooked on this premise of you know, this positive energy that can make money as we help and support people. And I became a general manager of a hotel chain. I'm very human dynamics oriented. So when I was young, I went to college at University of Denver, studied political science and cultural anthropology. I've always had a fascination with human behavior. How do I get you to make a right instead of a left? How do I get you to sit longer, stand longer, walk more, talk more, move your eyes this way, move your eyes that way? How do I get you to tap your feet? So I've always studied these elements of human behavior. And at a very young age, I learned something very powerful. And this was my first book. We're not doing a broadcast right now. That's not our product. Our product is the reaction from this broadcast. If the broadcast creates no reaction, it's meaningless. I'm in a restaurant business. I don't make food. I make reactions. I achieve it through food. Mm. When that plate hits the table, Dave, if you don't sit up, if I don't get a reaction, it's meaningless. I don't market. I create reactions through marketing. If marketing doesn't create a reaction, it has no purpose. I don't play music. I play reactions. I achieve it through music. So I don't manage people. I create reactions in people to cause reactions in others. And I learned at a very young age, and some of this was just the way I was brought up, that if I can master the reactions of the people around me, I can own this world. I get promoted quicker. I get promotions faster. I get dollars quicker. I get opportunities faster. So I learned this skill at a young age. And then I became a public speaker 35 years ago. And as a public speaker, I learned to look in the audience. And if you crossed your arms, I would change my topic instinctually right in the middle of a sentence. And I would move across, and I learned language skills until you do this. That's great. And I learned as a public speaker how to cause an audience. And you look at music, same 10 songs, different order, different experience, right? So I would look at these things and I would try to create reactions and speeches and visuals. Everything was about creating reactions for me. So I got a hotel. Revenues went up 30%, gave me another hotel, bigger hotel, bigger hotel, bigger hotel, bigger hotel. I was promoted 11 times in 5 years. My income went up 800% in 5 years because I know how to create reactions in people. I know how to get people to have a good time. And sports is no different.
If
a team creates no reactions, it has no purpose,
right? Did you expect any of this to come out of him? I'm sitting here like, oh my gosh, you're amazingly compelling. I have no idea.
That's the reaction he's looking for.
Yeah, good job.
You know, what's fascinating to me is that, you know, you go into places and your job, or at least what we see, is to see opportunity and change that needs to happen quickly and then to be able to offer that right away. That's a display of experience and skill. But I want to go back to the video that I saw when I watched you in here. I remember you pouring a beer, how to pour a beer. And it completely shifted the paradigm of how we thought we're supposed to carefully pour this beer. And then you put that napkin in there, you realize that here's the reaction that happens in our stomach. So as cool as it was, you got 30 million views. But is that a technique to show sort of the create that kind of reaction? And I said, when you're training the people that work at your restaurants and bars, sure.
You
tell us about what,
how you do that. Because you said, wow.
Yeah.
Right? And your eyebrows went up. So of course, you know, when I do seminars and educate people, knowledge without a reaction is meaningless, because without a reaction, there's no incentive, there's no motivation, there's no progress. So my biggest challenge in bar rescue, I can fix any business. I'm really good at it. I can build them the Taj Mahal if I want to. I know how to do that. I got to change them. And every failing business has a failing owner. I know that before I walk in that business. The owner doesn't, but I do. So the issue becomes when you walk in is you know, how do I change this person's behavior? That's when it gets ugly. Because now I'm challenging everything they do. I'm nitpicking. I'm getting him angry on purpose. I'm getting him to doubt himself on purpose. And the minute he doubts himself, that brain opens up and I can walk right in and I can start to change the way they think. And I say in seminars, I don't want to change what you do. I want to change the way you think. That's how I change what you do.
You know, what I'm noticing out of that is that everything he's doing is nothing about him. He lives his life in through the experience of his customer and his audience, which is fascinating.
My connection is very deep. I feel them.
Yeah.
And so that's why I can get so angry. I know how far to push them without pushing them too far. Yeah. You know, and then there's tricks that I do. If the owner is a drinker, I'll take a picture of his kids. I'll put it at the bottom of a glass. Every time he picks up a glass, he's staring at his children. So I'll do some pretty sneaky things. But there's one other quick story I'd like to tell.
Please.
If I can. I'm in Detroit, Michigan, and I'm doing the 120th episode of Bar Rescue. I've now done about 250. And there's a woman who owns this bar, and I look at her and I say, why are you failing? And every Bar Rescue episode, I always look at the owner and say, why are you failing? Sometimes it makes the final cut, sometimes it doesn't. This woman looked at me in Detroit, Michigan, and said to me, John, I'm failing because of the euro in Greece. I go back to my hotel room that night and I realize the absurdity of this. But at that moment, I realized I did 120 episodes of Bar Rescue. Not once did an owner say, I'm failing because of me. Not one time.
Wow.
So I go back to my hotel room and I realize what happens. She's blaming the euro in Greece. Somebody else blames the weather, the construction, the this, the that. F1, I can't get at the hotel. Everybody has a reason. If they wake up in the morning and blame that reason, they have no reason to change. So growth is frozen. So I said, okay, I found a common denominator of failure. It's an excuse, because what is an excuse? Mm-hmm. You did something you shouldn't have. You didn't do something you should have. You otherwise screwed up. So I need an excuse. If I find that excuse, I didn't fail. So now I find that, okay, the common denominator of failure is an excuse. If I can get excuses out of people's brain, what's left? Accountability, personal accountability. That's how you affect change, is you make it reside back in their head. And I keep pushing it back at them to try to affect that change. It's not easy. I've got to tell you, it's a very difficult process. But when it works, what you see, David, is amazing. Their posture changes. They walk differently. They talk. You can see it. Their entire demeanor has changed. So that's why I do it. That's a very powerful thing to experience. And it's very exciting when it happens.
I'm sitting here, he's like speechless going, wow, I did not expect that from
that
a guy who drinks.
That is amazing.
He's got a new bourbon coming out and owns restaurants. Years ago, I did an infomercial with Mr. Robert Irvine.
Yep, my buddy.
Yeah, fascinating to me how you guys survive in that whole world. But what inspired you to want to fix this? You could have had a very nice life owning restaurants and doing all of that stuff. By the way, you and I have that political science thing in common. I don't know what I'm supposed to do with it. Maybe we can talk after, because I don't know. What is that a degree in?
I'm glad I didn't go into politics. That's the darn
story. We're not glad, but you're glad.
So how did the whole TV thing start? Where did that come from?
It's actually a great story. I was giving a speech in Las Vegas at a hotel just like this. And at the end of the speech, somebody comes up to me and says, you should be on television. So I go back to my house. I write something up called On the Rocks, 3 pages. I had consulted to Paramount years earlier on Bubba Gump Shrimp's company in their consumer products division. So I call my friends at Paramount. I say, do me a favor. Can you get a bunch of TV people in a room? I want to come. I want to pitch this idea to you. See if you guys think I'm crazy or not. So I drive through the gates of Paramount. You know, pretty sexy stuff, right? You drive through the gates of Paramount. You're in Hollywood. And I go into the board meeting at the Marathon office building and ahead of TV. And they put all the right people in a room. And I pitch in my idea of On the Rocks. And they look at me and I'll say it cleaner than they said it to me. They looked at me and they said, John, you will never be on television. You're too old and you're not good looking enough. I get back in my car. I drive out the Paramount gates. And I realize that really the only person who can say no to me is me. I went, I shot my own sizzle reel, pitched it, sent it to production companies that I had no relationship with, got 4 out of 4 offers, and less than a year later, the show premiered on television. Now, 13 years later, it's one of the most successful reality shows of all time. And full circle, what network am I on? Paramount.
That's a great story.
There are lessons in these things. Yeah. You know, when you talk about passion and stuff, when you're really passionate, no's don't last very long. Yeah. You know, you push on and you have that tenacity to do it. So that's how I wound up on television.
Thank you for sharing that.
I never thought I would tell you the truth. I never, ever expected to be in a television business.
I know, right?
It's lots of wows.
Wow. So as I hear you speak, a commonality I'm picking up with you is you're a hope dealer. You literally get high off of providing smiles.
Wow. I've never heard it said to me
that
way. That's
really beautiful. A hope dealer.
No, that's real. That's very true.
Kind of a dope
because if I don't provide hope to the people around me, they don't move to that
different
next
show.
Exactly. And what I notice is a lot of people's hope is connected directly to their identity. And a lot of times people connect their identity to their work.
Yes.
You don't do that. Your identity is not connected to your work at all. It's connected to a feeling, a
business
purpose.
Isn't a child. It's not family. There's no blood in it.
Right.
You write me a check, you can have it, Dave. I got no emotional attachments to anything in business. You know, it's all about making the money so that I can be charitable, so that I can help people, so that I can do things. And I was talking to somebody just this week who's charitable in her business. I'm saying that makes no sense. You're not making any money. You can't be charitable with no money.
Thank you.
Run your business right, and then you'll have the money to be charitable.
Exactly.
So it makes no sense, people. So, you know, to me, a business is not a charity. A business is a business. You make as much money as you can. You build the great relationships, the connectivity with your market. And then from that money, you can do wonderful things.
Exactly.
It amazes me, John, because I sponsored my kids' scoreboard, and my motto is make a lot of money to help a lot of people and have a lot of fun. Right. And because of the mindset of education in America, they wouldn't put it up on the scoreboard. They switched it around. It has to say, help a lot of people, exactly, have a lot of fun, and make a little money or make some.
Serious?
They won't even put it up. They're so shame-based.
They blew the whole point.
It blew my whole point. And people will ask me that, even with things that I do. Like, why would you charge for that? You can afford to do this for free. I said, I do most of what I do for free. And if you want a more intimate experience, have a group experience and pay for it. Or one-on-one, let's do that. But I'll guarantee I'm a profit center to you. The interesting thing that you talk about is accountability in all that you do. And I'd really love some insight on what I have learned over the years is 3 levels of accountability. The first that I experienced when I lost everything was just taking responsibility for it. No blame,
owning it.
Shame, no justification. And that's what I would name Bar Rescue, right? Blame, shame, and justification. and literally, I watch it and it drives me crazy. And I had to work through saying, I'm responsible. What am I supposed to learn? I'm responsible for that. But then it took on another level, and these are the 2 levels that I want your insight. One was I took it to the next level and said, wait a second, I surrounded myself with the wrong people and the wrong ideas, and I attracted this to myself, and what am I supposed to learn? And then even more recently, over the last few years, I realized when you talked about change the way that they think about it, their life will change, and their posture will change, and their energy will change, and they're providing smiles. For me, it was, what am I doing to participate in this perception? And what am I supposed to learn? What's your philosophy or understanding of the law of attraction and the law of perception in context with accountability?
You know, I find that people do surround themselves with their ilk, if you will. If I want to be successful in corporate America, I better damn well look corporate, act corporate, and talk corporate. I better play that role. So at a very young age, and I didn't complete college. I dropped out of college. So at a very young age, I found myself in a room with senior executives. I was 30 years younger than him. Some people might think that's a real disadvantage. I thought I was 30 years ahead of them. Mm-hmm. Is the way I looked at it. I'm in the same room you are. I'm 30 years younger than you. So I built this confidence, and I found that at a young age, and I hate to say it this way, but I'm going to because I think it's on. When you're young, you BS a lot.
Yeah.
I got experience. Sometime around 35 years old, Dave, I stopped BSing. It became real. You know, the words became true experience and such. But to me, I've had those moments. You know, when I left college, I went to Hollywood. I ran the Troubadour, Barney's Beanery, and was in that whole, you know, when you're in that environment, you don't exactly have the highest class people around you in that world. So I evolved myself purposefully. I bought that expensive suit I couldn't afford. I bought the old Mercedes SL I couldn't afford, but it looked good when I pulled into that meeting. Mm-hmm. And I focused very much on imaging and presentation. You know, I worked very much on language skills and presentations, and then I built confidence. Wow. You know, we're sitting here in this hotel. Steve Wynn is one of my best friends. And, you know, I sit with him all the time. And you know, it's interesting. Look, I'm a restaurant hospitality guy. But most of my friends, surprisingly, are billionaires.
We know,
and that's not an intentional thing. It's just an evolutionary process. My grandfather used to say water seeks its level. You know, you put water in a glass, and, you know, some people are going to have a high level, some people are going to have a lower level, but that's nature. People can't change the level of their water and how they're perceived unless they really work hard at it.
Yeah, and the humility will allow us, no matter what level we're at, to allow all streams to flow to us and through us as well. So
the other thing about humility I think is really important as a business owner is, if you're focused on your people's success rather than your own, your success comes. Yep. And that's a really important thing. And I tell entrepreneurs this all the time. Don't become an entrepreneur until you're committed to make the people around you successful, whatever that takes. If you can't make them successful, you shouldn't be an entrepreneur. But, you know, I know in your biz, it's the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, success breeds success.
There's two icons I have. One is the ferocious Buddha, which is the reconciliation of being ferocious every day, but Zen in the outcomes, not attaching to them or identifying my own self-value and worth to those. But the other one is, and I've done it on several shows, I love this as the icon for entrepreneurs, because in both ways, I see people denying themselves how to become successful. This one's the harder one. You know, most entrepreneurs are afraid to reach up and ask Steve Wynn for help. Something that I did when I lost everything was I went right to the people that had the relationship with money that I wanted. And I said, Mr. Wynn, can I have your cell phone? I won't bother you, but when I need to know how you would see something, I want a couple minutes of your time to give me your relationship with money, like this. And guess what? Everyone up here just pulls me. And then this one, as you said, elevate others to elevate yourself. And so as entrepreneurs, if we have this in mind, I need to ask for help here, but then again, I'm not going to get to where I want to be just by finding someone in this situation.
Correct.
I need to help someone get to the same situation. And so those are two, and you, to me, the two things I realize in your movement is I see you constantly like this with people on your shows and in your life, that I know a lot of your friends are my friends, which is incredible. The other thing that's remarkable, and we watch this video, everyone, watch the show. I've never met anyone that does this more.
Oh yeah,
he's so yes oriented.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, it's that's such interesting.
Right.
It's hard, like, for you to say no to me. Oh,
it's so hard. Or not to agree with you, because you're just like, right on. Let's do this. You can do this, and I love
it's very
that.
Very purposeful.
Very purposeful, and that's what truly the intention that you give your life is.
You'll find this interesting. You might find it distasteful because the words don't exactly express the sentiment. To me, management is the achieving of objectives through the manipulation of others.
Achieving of objectives by
Now, manipulation, if I give you a raise, that's not a bad thing.
Right.
If I make you feel good, if I incentivize you, if I motivate you. So I'm not saying that manipulation is a bad thing.
That's a tough word.
But the fact is, I want 110% out of you. I got to cause that environment to make that happen. That is manipulation.
Yes, yes. Eliot said that just because something's been abused does not neglect its use. Some people abuse alcohol, doesn't mean you can't use it. Some people abuse manipulation, doesn't mean that you can't.
Right.
Use it to benefit.
Marshall Thurber is a great example. If you read Social Deviance and how we can perturbate a situation to create a reaction, a positive reaction, then it's not a negative thing. Yeah. Please make me one promise. I know your time is valuable, but please come back and join us, whatever capacity it is, your knowledge, your wisdom, your strength. we need in our community of people that want to help each other and know people that can help each other.
Thank you. I would love to come back. This was an honor.
Thank you so much.
It's a pleasure to be with you all. And I must say, this is the most fun I've had in an interview situation in a long, long time. So,
it is Office Hours Rescue.
Cheers.
And I will give the credit to John Taffer here on Office Hours.